program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Audio Journal's Young at Heart. The book selections for this hour are designed for elementary and middle grade listeners. This program is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. My name is Lavender, and I'm happy to be with you today. I'll continue reading from the book, Return of the Homework Machine, by Dan Gutman. Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. Judy, Brenton, Sam, and Kelsey came to me one day after school and said they wanted to talk in private. I figured it was about schoolwork, but it wasn't. They told me they wanted to hike down into the canyon and search for the secret cave that was mentioned in that newspaper article. They asked for my help. Well, I must admit that I was flattered, honored, and pleased that they were interested. So many of the kids here never even venture below the rim of the canyon. This could be the ultimate field trip, a real teachable moment. It was extremely doubtful that there was any treasure to be found, but they would learn about indigenous plants, trees, insects, wildlife, and the geology of the canyon. I'd be lying if I didn't admit that I wanted to give it another shot at finding the secret caverns myself. These kids were young and strong, and they would be a lot of help. On the other hand, it could be dangerous. Accidents happen. I wasn't sure I wanted to be responsible for the safety of four kids. I thought it over and agreed to be their chaperone if they each got their parents to sign a permission form. February is a bit too cold to be taking long hikes in the canyon. The summer is too hot. It gets up over 100 degrees, and people have been known to die out there from heat exhaustion. I thought a weekend in April or May would be perfect. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. I'm not sure if it was me or Milner who came up with the idea. Probably me. I was fooling around with the GPS I got for Christmas. It was pretty cool, but the capabilities were limited. That's when I started to wonder what would happen if I took the superchip out of my computer and put it in my handheld GPS instead. It would make it into a super GPS, and a super GPS was just the thing I needed because it could lead me right to the location of the secret caverns, right to the treasure of the Grand Canyon. Chapter 7, March, Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. One of the things we spend a lot of time on in sixth grade is ancient Egypt. They were a fascinating people, and the kids were fascinated by them. I got some videos from the library to show them what life was like in the time of the pharaohs. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. What interested me the most were the pyramids. 6 million tons of stone. Some of the blocks weigh 9 tons. Think about it. The wheel wasn't invented yet. The only tools the Egyptians had to move and carry all that stone were wood and rope. So how did they build the pyramids? I'll tell you how. They didn't. Aliens had to have built them. Did you know that the Great Pyramid is lined up exactly with the magnetic North Pole of the Earth? That can't be coincidence. The compass hadn't been invented yet either. If you go on the internet, there's a lot of evidence that people couldn't have built the pyramids. It had to be aliens. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. The coolest thing about the Egyptians was the way they preserved their dead guys. They would pull their organs out and make them into mummies. They would break their nose and then bust the brain into little pieces so they could pull it out through where the nose used to be. I'm not making this stuff up. And then, get this, they would fill the skull with sawdust. Sounds like some people I know. And they're still alive. Mr. Murphy told us he went to a museum in Egypt once, and they had a special mummy room. You had to pay a separate admission just to see the mummies. So he paid the admission and went in. And you know how when you see mummies in cartoons, they're all wrapped up in tape and stuff? Well, these mummies were unwrapped. Mr. Murphy said it was like looking at meat in a supermarket. Gross! But mummies are cool. The Egyptians mummified cats and crocodiles, too. They really loved their mummies. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. The ancient Egyptians worshipped Ra, the sun god, Horus, the sky god, and Osiris, the god of the dead. They believed that every day Ra sailed across the sky in a boat. And then, at night, he would disappear into the underworld of the West. There was another Nile River there, they believed. Osiris pulled the boat along this river until morning when the sun rose again. It was actually very beautiful. Judy Douglas, grade 6. I liked that the ancient Egyptians were a peaceful people. They created beautiful art, architecture, sculpture, and writing. Mr. Murphy told us that for years and years, nobody was able to translate Egyptian hieroglyphics. Then they found this thing called the Rosetta Stone, which was a tablet that had a passage written in 3 different languages. After many years, they finally translated them, and they were able to figure out what the hieroglyphics meant. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. Everything about ancient Egypt interested the kids, but what really made their eyes bug out was when we got to King Tutankhamun. I guess it was because Tut was 9 years old when he became pharaoh, and he was only 19 when he died. Kids can relate to that. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Mr. Murphy told us that a British archaeologist named Howard Carter searched for the tomb of King Tut for 15 years until he finally found it in the Valley of the Kings in 1922. He reached a sealed doorway to a burial chamber. When he opened it and peered inside with a candle, there was King Tut's tomb, completely intact. It was made of solid gold, and it was surrounded by lots of other golden things, jewels, treasures, and all the boy king's possessions. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. King Tut's tomb had a curse, you know. They all did. There were warnings around the body. Death shall come on swift wings to him that touches the tomb of the pharaoh. I think it was true. Most people don't know that the guy who hired Howard Carter to find King Tut died 5 months after they opened the tomb. He was bitten by a mosquito, and it got infected. I looked it up. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Kelsey tried to scare us with all that curse baloney. She said that if we found the secret treasure of the Grand Canyon, there might be a curse on it. I wasn't buying that mumbo-jumbo. Of course she would fall for that cursed stuff. She'll fall for anything. I couldn't wait to leave for our trip. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. It was astonishing to me that most of these kids have lived within a mile of the Grand Canyon their whole lives. But none of them had ever hiked all the way down to the Colorado River. When I asked them why not, they just shrugged and said they never thought about it. Amazing! Hiking a mile down into the canyon is not like a stroll in the woods. I spent the next few weeks after school preparing for our trip. Being responsible for the safety of four kids, I wanted to make sure nothing went wrong. I got a wilderness permit so we could legally stay overnight in the back country. There were maps we would need and lots of gear. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I couldn't believe how much junk we had to lug with us for just a long weekend. Flashlights, headlamps, extra batteries, a first aid kit, walking sticks, Swiss Army knives, cameras, sleeping bags, garbage bags. We had to bring signal mirrors in case we got into trouble and had to get help. Mr. Murphy told us that cell phones usually don't work at the bottom of the canyon. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Suntan lotion, lip balm, polarizing sunglasses, wide-brimmed hats to keep the sun off our faces. Mr. Murphy told us each to bring a handkerchief so we could soak it in the river and cool off. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. High-sodium snacks like nuts, pretzels, beef jerky, energy bars, water, lots of water. They say that if you hike down into the canyon in the summertime, you need to drink a gallon of water a day. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. And of course, you have to bring your own toilet paper and a metal shovel for burying your own waste. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Ugh, disgusting! Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. Milner and I met at the visitor center one day after school. I opened up my GPS and took out the chip that was in there. I carefully replaced it with the super chip and turned it on. Neither of us was expecting it to work. Well, I plugged in some information from the Phoenix Gazette article, and the GPS started humming. It felt alive in my hand, like magnetic, you know? It was like one of those divining rods that find water. No, it was more like a dog that's so anxious to go for a walk that it pulls you to the door. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We have spring break the second week in April, so there's no school for a few days, and the weather is usually perfect. It would be a good time to go. Richard Milner. Personal Diary, March 27th. Met with Ronnie. Agreed to search for treasure on or around April 15th when he is off from school. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. I know it's easy to say now, but from the beginning I really felt the trip was a mistake. I didn't tell anybody at the time, but I just had an intuition that something was going to go wrong. Finding a treasure didn't mean anything to me. Who cares about that stuff? I was filled with a sense of foreboding. Chapter 8. April. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. You need to know all the details of what happened that weekend? Okay. It's a long story. Where do I start? I remember we had to get up super early because Mr. Murphy said it wasn't safe to be hiking in the middle of the day when the sun is high in the sky. So we all met at the Bright Angel Lodge at 6 a.m. That wasn't fun. I like to sleep late when I'm on vacation. I'd hiked below the rim before, of course, but not very far. I'd usually go an hour or so and come back up. I'd never been all the way down to the river. That's a long hike. They've got these signs all over the trail warning you to turn back if you're not in good shape. If you have a heart condition, if you didn't bring enough water, stuff like that. They say that nobody should try to hike all the way down to the river and back in one day. There's this one sign that always cracks me up. It's a stick figure of a hiker down on his hands and knees. And he's puking his guts out. Hey, if you get in trouble, you can't say nobody warned you. Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. There are a number of trails that lead from the south rim of the canyon down to the Colorado River. I chose the Bright Angel Trail because it's the easiest and most gradual. These kids were not experienced hikers, and I didn't want anyone to get hurt. Even so, it's almost 8 miles to the river with all the switchbacks, a 4,380-foot descent. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. I didn't tell the others, but I had never hiked in my life. I'm sure they'd make fun of me. It's a little embarrassing. I grew up less than a mile from the Grand Canyon, but I never even set foot below the rim until that day we went looking for the blinking red light. It was scary when we started out. I'm not afraid of heights or anything, but as soon as we went below the rim, it looks like you're about to drop off a cliff. If you took a couple of steps in the wrong direction, you could fall off a rock and die. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Everybody was in good spirits when we started out. Snick was cracking jokes and making fun of everybody. The trail is smooth and wide. It's easy walking downhill, of course. Climbing back up is a lot harder. They say it takes twice as long to hike out as it does to hike in. We were anxious to get down to the river, but we went slowly. Mr. Murphy said we had to take a 10-minute break every hour, even if we weren't tired. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. It was dirty and dusty. They actually let mules carry people and supplies on the trail. Mules! We all had to move aside to let a bunch of mules go by. So I had another thing to worry about, stepping in mule manure. I really don't like hiking. Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. A lot of chipmunks and squirrels were scampering around. I hoped that the kids might get the chance to see some bobcats, mountain lions, and bighorn sheep, too. There are actually something like 1,500 plant and 400 animal species living in the Grand Canyon today. Some of them have been here since the Ice Age. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Mr. Murphy was being all teacher-like. He'd say, "Look, kids, there's a whiptail lizard." And tell us some random fact about it. Or, "Ooh, check out that peregrine falcon. He can fly 250 miles an hour. I think that in teacher school, they must tell all the teachers in training that they have to always be teaching whether or not there's anything worth learning. I was making fun of him, but in a nice way. He's a good guy. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. We came upon a little carving on the wall. It was a stick figure of a person running. Everybody thought it was graffiti, but Mr. Murphy told us it was a pictograph, sort of like a prehistoric doodle. Some ancient cartoonist was trying to talk to us, but we didn't know what he was saying. Snick wanted to make a rubbing of it, but Mr. Murphy told him not to because that would damage it. Well, you're not even supposed to touch them. We took some pictures instead. You know what they say? Take only pictures, leave only footprints. My mom once told me that when she was young, they taught kids in school that Columbus, quote unquote, discovered America. They made a big deal about celebrating Columbus Day. Then they found out that people lived in America more than 3,000 years before Columbus was even born. Oops! That must have been embarrassing. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We took a break at the mile and a half rest house. Funny name. It's nothing fancy, but they have toilets, picnic tables, and an emergency telephone. We could get out of the sun for a while. It was already getting hot. Mr. Murphy kept telling us we should eat before we get hungry and drink before we get thirsty. He said plenty of hikers get heat exhaustion. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Mr. Murphy told us that over 700 people have died at the Grand Canyon. 700! It happens all the time! People get struck by lightning, or they drown in the rapids of the Colorado River. There are flash floods, snake bites, rock falls, and of course, lots of people run out of water, become dehydrated, and drop dead. People can be just dumb, too. In 1993, he told us, these two guys from California jumped into the canyon with parachutes. Their chutes opened, but they got tangled on the way down, and that was it for them. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. Mr. Murphy said that lots of guys think it's fun to pee off really high places, like a cliff. Judy and I thought that was totally repulsive, but the boy said it sounded cool. The only problem is that some of these guys lose their balance while they're peeing and fall into the canyon. Boys can be so stupid. I started looking up to make sure nobody was going to pee on us or fall on us. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Mr. Murphy told us that a lot of people even died while they were just posing for pictures. Can you imagine? Somebody would be taking a picture of their friend or something, and they'd say back up a little to get a good view, and their friend would back up and fall off a cliff. Snick laughed. I told him that it wasn't funny. What a horrible way to die. You shouldn't laugh at other people's misfortunes. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I probably shouldn't have told them about the tragedies at the Grand Canyon, but it did help pass the time while we were hiking. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. There was another rest house at the 3-mile mark. My legs were already hurting from walking downhill. Mr. Murphy was making fun of us. He said we were out of shape because we spend too much time watching TV and surfing the internet. I took my boots off, and he told me to be careful when I put them back on. When I asked him why, he said a scorpion might have crawled into them. Great. Now I had to worry about stepping in mule manure, guys peeing on my head, or falling off cliffs, and scorpions crawling into my boots. I was ready to go home. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I picked up a nice walking stick. I wanted to kill a snake with it. You can spot a rattlesnake because they have a diamond-shaped pattern on their back. They usually hide from the sun, so they're hard to find. Unless, of course, you sit in some shady spot where one of them decides to take a nap. Mr. Murphy told us that if we saw a rattler, we should just leave it alone and it would leave us alone. But I wanted to kill one. It would make a good souvenir. Oh my goodness, Sam. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. As you wend your way down the switchbacks on the trail, you can see the texture and the colors change on the sides of the canyon. It goes from cream to pinkish white. So you're actually walking from one geological time period into the previous one. It occurred to me that hiking down the canyon is about the closest any of us will ever come to traveling through time. It took millions of years for the river to slice its way through that rock, but we walked past it in a few hours. Even though it seemed like we had been hiking a long time, it sort of put things into perspective. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We started to see more vegetation, bushes and trees. Some of them had grapes. I was afraid they might be poisonous, but Mr. Murphy said they were okay to eat. I tried one, but it was really tart, so I spit it out. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. We came to the Indian Garden Campground. They have a ranger station there and drinking water. The ranger told us that a long time ago, the Havasupai Indians lived there and even did farming. He said we had walked almost 5 miles from the rim. It felt like 100. Mr. Murphy only let us rest for a few minutes before we had to gather up our stuff and keep going. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. What struck me was how peaceful it becomes as you get closer to the bottom of the canyon. All the noises you hear in the real world, planes, cars honking, the hum of electrical appliances, people talking too loudly into their cell phones, are gone. It was like I never heard real quiet before, just the rustling of the wind. The only people who make it this far are the serious hikers. Most tourists only hike a few miles and go back up to the rim, back up to the real world. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. I've seen all these pictures of the Grand Canyon. But as beautiful as the pictures are, it's not the same as seeing it with your own eyes. Looking up at the sandstone cliffs just blew me away. I had never seen anything so spectacular. It made me want to protect the environment of this wonderful planet even more. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. After we left the Indian Garden Campground, we could see the Colorado River plainly and everybody got excited. We were almost there. We passed through some switchbacks called the Devil's Corkscrew, and then there was a steep drop down to Pipe Creek. There was a waterfall near there and the River Rest House. I wanted to jump in the water, but there was no time. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. 2 more miles and we finally reached the Silver Suspension Bridge. On the other side of the bridge is the Bright Angel Campground, and that's where we camped out for the night. We were all exhausted. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We rested up and ate dinner. Mr. Murphy had some freeze-dried chicken. It sounded nauseating. I remember being really hungry, and it tasted so good. Food always tastes good after you've been exercising. By the time we finished eating, it was dark out. It's really cold at the bottom of the canyon, even in April. We all climbed into our sleeping bags to get warm. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. I remember lying there, looking up at the stars and thinking to myself how lucky I was to be alive. I was in a crack in the earth, one of the 7 wonders of the world. Most people never get to see the Grand Canyon in their lifetime, and here I was, at the bottom of it. I could understand why some people would want to believe in canyonism. I was lying on a rock that could very possibly be 2 billion years old. If you're going to worship something, why not the planet that you live on? It's the place that gives you air to breathe, food to eat, water to drink, and after you have those things, what else do you really need? A cell phone? An iPod? Who needs that stuff? I fell asleep almost instantly. Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. Most folks who raft the Colorado start out at Lee's Ferry. You usually can't get a raft anywhere near the Bright Angel campground, but I know a fellow over at Phantom Ranch down there. It's the only commercial tourist facility below the rim. He arranged for us to get an 18-foot neoprene raft that could seat the five of us comfortably. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Mr. Murphy woke us up and made us put on life jackets before we could get into the raft. That's when it occurred to me, what if we found all those treasures and gold and stuff that we read about in that article? How would we get the stuff back up to the rim? Mr. Murphy said that if there were any treasures, they belonged to the state of Arizona. Bummer! We all wanted to find the caverns anyway. I wanted to see for myself. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. After we pushed the raft off, the boys were acting all macho, grabbing the paddles and shouting out silly orders. They totally didn't know what they were doing. It was fun to watch. They were so immature. Judy Douglas, grade 6. The boys were being boys, splashing us with the paddles and so on. Like it was all fun and games, but suddenly we hit some white water and Snick almost fell out of the raft. That straightened him out quick. We all had to paddle really hard to avoid the rocks on both sides. The river pulls you along, but you still have to steer. It was fun, but a little scary, too. It was my first time rafting. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. The water smoothed out as we got close to 94 Mile Creek and Trinity Creek. This is the area where there are rock formations with Egyptian names, Tower of Ra, Horus Temple, Osiris Temple, Isis Temple, Cheops Pyramid. We put down our paddles and got out binoculars. I started scanning up and down the north side of the canyon. I was looking for an opening in the canyon walls or maybe a shadow. The secret cavern could have been covered up by trees or bushes. We knew it had to be around there, if it existed at all. With five pairs of eyes, we figured that one of us would see it. Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. I had read the Phoenix Gazette article very carefully, line by line, but still I had only a very general idea of where the caverns might be. I knew they had to be pretty well hidden, or some tourist would have stumbled upon them a long time ago. And they were probably pretty high above the river. We'd have to climb up to them if we saw them. Thousands of years ago, when people inhabited caverns, the Grand Canyon wasn't as deep. Maybe it was a short climb up from the river. Now it would be a longer climb. Of course, I was well aware that the whole story I had read could have simply been an elaborate newspaper hoax. In all probability, there were no secret caverns, no hidden treasures. How could ancient Egyptians have found their way to the Grand Canyon in the first place? How could they cross the ocean? It just didn't make sense. I remember that's what I was thinking when suddenly our raft bumped into another raft. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. We were all looking up at the canyon walls through binoculars when our raft crashed into another raft. It was tied to a branch at the north side of the river. except for the paddles. The only thing on the other raft was a picnic cooler. Everybody freaked out a little because we hadn't seen another soul on the river since we started out. I climbed on the other raft and looked for a name or something. That's when I saw the writing on the back of the cooler. It said, Property of Richard Milner. Whoa! Oh, I remembered that name. He was the guy who was stalking us when we were using the homework machine. He seemed a little nutty. We put two and two together. Ronnie and Milner must have teamed up. They were looking for the treasure, too. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. I couldn't believe it. They beat us there. We all looked up, thinking we would see them climbing up or down the rocks, but they weren't around. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. I knew right away what happened. Ronnie must have taken our chip from the homework machine and put it into that portable GPS he was always carrying around. That would have been the only way to find the caverns. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. I figured that was it. Let's go home, you know? But the boys got all excited. They wanted to climb up. Even if we couldn't get any treasure for ourselves, they wanted to see it. So did Mr. Murphy. Judy and I would have been just as happy to call it a day. I wanted to go home and take a good long nap in my own bed. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I should have stopped it right there. If I'd known, then what I know now, I would have ended the trip and gone home. But as they say, hindsight is 20/20. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. Milner and I didn't hike down the canyon like the others. We took his van to Lee's Ferry and put the raft in the water there. It was his idea. He said that if we found any treasure, we could load it up in the van and drive it out of there. The GPS worked like magic. I plugged all the information I had into it, and the thing practically led us straight to the spot where we tied up the raft. You couldn't see any caves from the river, and there was no trail, but we had confidence that something was up there. We tied up the raft and started climbing the north wall. It was hard. I remember that I wished I had hiking boots because my sneakers weren't very good for digging in the cracks in the wall. Luckily, there were a lot of vines to grab onto. We must have climbed nearly 2,000 feet up. That's where we started to see stains in the sedimentary formation. Then there was a rock shelf up there, and right above it was the mouth of the cave. The rock shelf hid it from the river. The opening was about the size of a small doorway, but rounded at the top. There were chisel marks on the wall inside the entrance. It wasn't just a natural cave. People carved it. Those chisel marks were probably thousands of years old. The last time somebody stood on that rock shelf, Columbus hadn't sailed for America yet. I got goosebumps. Milner and I turned on our flashlights and went inside the cave. There were steps going up, about 10 of them. At the top of the steps, there was a room, and that's where we found a body. Yeah, a dead body. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. We tied our raft to the same branch as Milner's raft and started climbing up the rock wall. Yeah, all of it. Even Judy, even Mr. Murphy, he's in pretty good shape for an old guy. Judy Douglas, grade 6. I offered to stay behind and guard the raft. I'm not a rock climber. There were some vines and branches to hold on to, but it looked really scary. Mr. Murphy wanted us all to stay together as a group, so I had to climb up. And to be honest, I wanted to see what it was up there as much as anybody else. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. I had never seen a dead body before, and I kind of freaked out. I didn't want to touch it. It didn't look like a mummy. It wasn't wrapped or anything, like in the cartoons. It was more like a skeleton, but with clothes on. Regular clothes, not Egyptian clothes. It wasn't ancient or anything. I felt like I might have to throw up, and I sat down for a minute to catch my breath. Milner wasn't bothered by the body. When he touched it, the skull fell off. He went through the pockets of the clothing until he found a wallet. There were some papers inside it. The name on one sheet was G.E. Kincaid. I remember that was the name of the guy in the newspaper article who claimed to have discovered the treasure. And here he was, dead. Judy Douglas, grade 6. We started climbing up the side of the canyon. I was terrified. Everybody kept saying not to look down, but I couldn't help it. I knew that if I put my foot on a rock and the rock gave way, I would be dead. I would be another one of those idiots Mr. Murphy told us about who fell into the Grand Canyon. I would become a story that boys like Snick would laugh about someday. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. After G.E. Kincaid discovered the caverns and told the newspaper about it, he must have gone back to haul out the treasures. Then he died in there. I couldn't tell what happened to him. There weren't any bullet holes or signs that he died violently. I didn't want to investigate too closely, though. It grossed me out. For all I knew, he died of starvation in there all by himself. Milner told me that if Kincaid's body was there, the treasures must be there, too. He stepped right over the body like it was a pile of laundry. We shined the flashlights around, and there were 4 or 5 tunnels going off in different directions. It was like we were at the hub of a bicycle wheel and the tunnels were the spokes. I didn't tell if they were man-made or not. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. We were very careful climbing up the rock wall. I didn't want any of the kids to get hurt. For the first time, I entertained the real possibility that we had actually found the secret caverns of the Grand Canyon. The article in the Phoenix Gazette may have been factual. The higher we climbed, the more excited I became. Think about it. For centuries, explorers had been looking for treasure in the Southwest. Back in 1540, a Spaniard named Francisco Vasquez de Coronado led an expedition from Mexico looking for the 7 cities of Cibola. They were supposed to be great riches hidden there. He never found anything except the natural beauty of the land. As I climbed up the rock wall, I was excited. Maybe we were going to find what Coronado didn't. We were modern-day explorers. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. Milner and I went into the first tunnel, and it was like when that guy, Howard Carter, found King Tut's tomb. There was stuff everywhere, big pots made out of clay and straw. Simple wooden chairs, tools made from some kind of metal. Milner said it must have been the place where food was prepared by whoever lived there. The tunnel went on and on. It was musty. Instead of exploring the whole thing, we went over to the next tunnel. It was empty, but when we pointed our flashlights at the walls, we could see they were covered with paintings. Mostly, they were pictures of animals, deer and elk. There were some stick figures, too, that looked like people. Some of them were painted. Some looked like they were drawn with charcoal. And some were carved right into the wall. It was an ancient art gallery. Milner said, "We must be getting close. I remember he said that God would have never built such an incredible underground city unless there was something very special hidden inside it." Sam Dawkins, grade 6. I realized why we couldn't see the cave from the river. There was a rock shelf right below the opening, so the cave was hidden. I pulled myself up on the shelf and then helped the others climb up. There were marks on the wall inside the entrance. They must have been made with a metal tool. I wondered where Milner and Ronnie were. If their raft was down below, they had to be up there somewhere. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. Milner and I went over to explore the next tunnel. There were stone tablets scattered around in there, and some of them had writing on them. Milner said it looked Egyptian. He told me that the ancient Egyptians used to post warnings and curses outside their tombs, like anyone who disturbed the tomb would die a horrible death. I was scared but tried not to show it. Milner said he bet we would hit the jackpot in the next tunnel. He was right. It was the most incredible thing I had ever seen. A large room filled with mummies, dozens of them leaning against the walls in simple wooden coffins. The coffins had no tops on them, so the mummies were just standing there staring at us. It was creepy. It looked like they were wrapped in bark or something. On the ground were a bunch of gold swords. Gold! And in the far corner of the room was a big statue, maybe 7 feet high. A man. It looked like a Buddha sitting there. It was cross-legged, holding a flower in each hand. My flashlight shined off it. The thing was made of gold. I tapped it with my knuckles. It was solid. Solid gold. It must have been worth millions. It was beautiful. Milner and I both cried out. I couldn't believe it. We had found the treasure of the Grand Canyon. It was ours for the taking. Milner picked up one of the swords and blew the dust off it. I'll always remember what he said to me. Kid, guess what? You'll never have to work a day in your life. We're millionaires. Then he took a big flask of whiskey out of his pocket, opened the top, and drank it. A little celebration. It crossed my mind that Milner might try something to cut me out of the deal. We didn't have any written contract or agreement, just a handshake that said we would split anything we found down the middle. He was bigger and stronger than me. There would be nothing to stop him from taking all the stuff for himself. I made it a point not to turn my back on Milner, just in case. When the whiskey was finished, he threw the flask against the rocks and it shattered. Judy Douglas, grade 6. I thought I heard a sound, like glass breaking. I wanted to get out of there, just back out and climb down. The others held me and told me everything would be all right. Maybe it was just my imagination. There were some steps going up near the entrance to the cave, and we started climbing them. It was dark. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. I heard a sound, like footsteps and voices. It had to be my imagination, I figured. Nobody had been in the cave for thousands of years. How could somebody be there now? I thought it was a zombie or something. Milner and I rushed out to the landing. the hub where G.E. Kincaid's body was. And that's where we saw them. Sam Dawkins, Judy, Kelsey, and Brenton. And the thing that surprised me the most was that they were with our teacher, Mr. Murphy. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. Well, I just screamed. Ronnie Teotwaki was standing there with that guy, Milner, who had been stalking us when we had the homework machine. He was carrying a sword in his hand, and on the ground in front of them, there was a dead body with no head. I had never been so terrified in my life. Judy and I screamed. I thought I might pass out. Judy Douglas, grade 6. The four of us instinctively moved closer together as a group. It just felt like a bad situation. I wished I had never come. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. I was furious. I said to them, "What are you doing here?" Sam Dawkins, grade 6. So Ronnie says, "What are you doing here?" And I say, "The same thing you're doing here, looking for the treasure." Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. Milner was even more mad than I was. He told them to get lost. He started yelling, "We were here first. You just followed us. You never would have found the cavern if we hadn't found it first. If anybody deserves to get the treasure, it's us. So get out." And he was right, too. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. I told Ronnie that the only reason he found the cavern first was because he stole our chip and put it in his GPS. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. I told Brenton that maybe he shouldn't have catapulted his computer into the Grand Canyon if the chip meant so much to him. There's an old law of the jungle, finders keepers. I found the chip, so it belonged to me, and I used the chip to find the treasure, so that belonged to me too. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. It was really awkward. Nobody was saying anything. Milner and Mr. Murphy were just staring at each other, like they were really going to fight over the treasure. I looked around. There were 5 of us there, and only 2 of them. Of course, Milner had a sword in his hand, which changed the odds, and I didn't think Judy would be very useful if things were going to get violent. But even so, we had the advantage. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I could smell alcohol on Milner's breath. It was a very dangerous situation, and I felt that somebody needed to calm things down. I said that we should all be happy because we had stumbled upon a great archaeological find, perhaps the most important one in American history. I pointed out that legally, any artifacts found within the Grand Canyon belong to the state of Arizona, or very possibly the Havasupai Indians, who still live on a reservation nearby. To them, this was probably sacred ground. Ronnie Teotwaki, grade 6. Well, Milner just flipped. He started ranting about Indians. He said, "Why is everything sacred just because some Indian touched it? They could just say the whole United States is sacred ground. They were here first. It was their land. We took it from them. We took everything from them. What's different here?" He started waving the sword around and telling them to get out before somebody got hurt. I tried to get him to calm down, but he waved the sword at me, too. He was getting out of control. Mr. Murphy, 6th grade teacher. I told the kids to stand back against the wall. I had so carefully planned out this whole trip to make sure nobody would get hurt hiking, rafting, or climbing. But it never occurred to me that we would encounter a drunken lunatic with a sword. Some things you can't plan for. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Mr. Murphy looked real calm. He kept trying to get Milner to put the sword down and talk things over man to man, but Milner wouldn't listen. He kept yelling and threatening us. Sometimes you can't reason with people. He was waving that sword around like he was Indiana Jones or something. Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. I spent my whole career in the military. Except for the practice range, not once did I pull the trigger on a gun. Never got into a fist fight. Never hurt another person in my life. But I know how to defend myself. They trained me for that. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. They were circling around each other like boxers. The only difference was that Kincaid's dead body was between the two of them. I was paralyzed. We all were. The girls were crying and yelling for them to stop. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. Finally, Milner lunged at Mr. Murphy with the sword. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Mr. Murphy kicked the sword out of his hand. Judy Douglas, grade 6. The sword hit Milner on the side of his face. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. He put his hand to his cheek and saw the blood on it. He was real mad. He took a wild swing at Mr. Murphy with his bare fist. Mr. Murphy, sixth grade teacher. In martial arts, they teach you to use physics. If somebody lunges toward you, their forward momentum can be used to your advantage. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. Mr. Murphy ducked the punch and shoved Milner aside. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. Milner tripped over Kincaid's body and lost his balance. That's when he fell down the steps. Judy Douglas, grade 6. Milner went head over heels down the steps and over the rock shelf. We all ran over. His legs went over the edge. Kelsey Donnelly, grade 6. He was hanging there with his elbows up on the ledge for a moment or so. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. He was struggling to hold on. Brenton Damagachi, grade 6. He looked up at us. There was a pleading look on his face, but there was nothing we could do. Sam Dawkins, grade 6. And then he slipped off the edge. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today. This Young at Heart program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of the program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I hope you will join us next time for Young at Heart. If you have any ideas or comments, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Lavender. Thank you for listening.
Audio Journal is supported in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. We are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
Did you know ADA paratransit riders in Worcester, Auburn, Boylston, Leicester, Northborough, Oxford, Westboro, and West Boylston now have the option to schedule trips through the Worcester Regional Transit Authority's new online reservation system? Call customer service at 508-791-9782 or email paratransit@therta.com to begin scheduling your trip online.
Would you like to hear news from Shrewsbury, Northborough, Southborough, and Westborough that you're not likely to hear on commercial television or radio? Then tune in to Audio Journal every Tuesday at 4 p.m.